This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Malaysian-born, Perth-based composer, musician and playwright Nick Chu is putting together a charity fundraiser concert in aid of his own brother. Among those performing at this concert are some of Nick's longtime collaborators like Peter Ong and Tria Aziz, performing songs from Nick's musicals The Edge, Follow the Light, Dreaming Outside the Box and much more. Nick joins me now to share what's in store. Welcome, Nick. How are you today?
Hi. Good, thank you, Juliet.
Always a pleasure. So, I mean, full disclosure, Nick and I first met back in 2004, Nick. It's been 14 years.
That is scary.
When we were both studying in Perth. And like I said, 14 years have passed, but I understand you are actually back at our old alma mater pursuing your PhD right
That's
now.
That's correct.
Tell me about that. What are you doing?
Oh dear. Where do I begin? I started in June 2016. Basically, what I'm doing is an arts PhD is a very tricky thing, I think.
Okay.
That's what I think, at least. You don't really have labs to go to. You don't have a lot of structure. Mm. You don't have a specific outcome straight away. Mm. So what I'm doing is something called practice-based research,
okay,
where I actually do shows. I actually write, you know, musicals and get involved in productions and sort of see what, you know, threads or what observations can come out of those productions, mm-hmm, that could potentially be the basis of my research. Now, obviously, I can't go in blind without any ideas.
Of course.
So one of the ideas that I'm currently pursuing is looking at myself as an artist, mm-hmm, from Malaysia in Australia and exploring my life as an artist. Now, you might wonder, how is that a PhD? But there's a mode of research. This is going to get very technical.
It's
a mode of research called autoethnography. Mm-hmm. Now, ethnography is the study of culture in a very contemporary way. Auto refers to, like, autobiography, refers to the self.
Okay.
So it's placing yourself in another culture and observing the self and how the, you know, how the culture affects you, how your life in a different culture just, you know, affects your productivity. So I'm looking at things like just my everyday life, the people I live with, the people I interact with, the way things are done in the theatre companies, mm-hmm, how these things affect my output as a composer, as a creator.
Wow.
And looking at and observing these things. So it's a lot of journaling, a lot of observation, a lot of recordings of and self-reflections. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'm quite open about is that I do struggle sometimes with some mental health, depression and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that has, at the moment, the direction I'm going in seems to be looking at how my life and my creativity is tied in with mental health, about my, you know, tied in with my moods, how I feel.
Yeah.
So because part of the reason I'm doing this is because some of the people who have heard that I'm doing autoethnography said, that's interesting writing about yourself, but how is this relevant to other people?
Right.
How about other academics who read your thesis? How is this relevant to them?
Mm-hmm.
So there needed to be something bigger, you know, a bigger picture.
Okay.
A bigger picture, yeah. And so when I realized that, okay, I could actually tie in some of my personal mental health, you know, the mental, emotional kind of difficulties that I think a lot of us go through, but, you know, but personally I go through as well. If I could tie that in with my research, then when people read this, they can see, oh, okay, it's not just about Nick Chu self-indulgently talking about himself, you know?
Yeah.
It's about Nick Chu looking at something that could potentially affect a lot of artists, a lot of, not even artists, but a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's the direction I'm headed in.
Okay.
I'm 1.5 years in. And a lot of people will say, a lot of people who do PhD will say that's still very early. So
yes.
I'm still finding my way in a sense, but that's the general idea that I have.
Mm-hmm. But it's very good of you, I suppose, to tie in something as personal as your own mental health. And that is such a huge topic, I mean, now. And it's great that, you know, to normalize it in that sense so that people aren't so afraid to speak about it.
Exactly, to have discussions about it.
Exactly.
And to just be, you know, sort of, the word, I hate to use the word embracing the fact that I go through these things. Embracing is probably not the best word to use, but to acknowledge it and to try to cope and manage it.
Yeah.
And I think by doing this, by having all these self-reflections and being so aware, having to be aware of where you are and how you feel at a certain time,
mm-hmm,
it actually could end up being really cathartic and really helpful.
Yeah.
It's like therapy, but without the therapist.
Yes,
but
yes.
Part of the process is also seeing and talking to a lot of people, including mental health professionals. It's not so much the focus, even though we talk about mental health, it's not a clinical, obviously, it's not a clinical PhD.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a psychology or a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still very much rooted in the arts,
mm-hmm.
So when in the thesis, I imagine that when I talk about mental health, it's going to be very, in a sense, superficial, not very on the surface.
Okay.
We won't go deep into what causes it and this and then and all the chemical stuff that happens, because
mm-hmm.
that's not relevant to an arts PhD. Mm-hmm. Or it might not be relevant. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but I suppose it's sort of like how that kind of affects the output of your work.
In that
work.
Regard, it would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, your creativity,
yes,
how that,
yes.
Makes you create what you create,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Right? And that's okay. Precisely what I'm looking at. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's exciting. Mm. I hope to read it one of these days.
I hope to finish writing it.
No pressure. And I mean, just speaking about people going to art school, for example, I mean, if someone already has a talent, like you already have your talent, but do you think they should go and get that professional training?
I definitely think so. Oh, thank you, by the way. Yeah, I just realized you complimented me. Oh.
Hey.
I think so. I think if you do have the talent for music and you have an interest and a passion in theatre, it's definitely worth pursuing. I think our society, Malaysian society especially, is moving increasingly towards embracing the arts a lot more. And I don't think there's as much stigma about being an artist full-time anymore. There still is, sadly.
Of course and I don't think that's going to go away.
That's not going to go away, yeah. But I think it's worth pursuing if that's really where your heart and your passion lies.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do what I did, which was I did a journalism degree first.
Yes,
we did a journalism degree first. So that I always have that to fall back on.
Yeah.
And then I decided to pursue creative arts as a second thing. But at the moment, the creative arts is my primary job, is my primary career.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, to answer your question, yes, I think it's worth pursuing as long as your heart's in the right place and you really are excited about doing it. Otherwise, music and theatre can just be a part-time thing, a hobby, if you really want it to be. It really depends on your own, what your own aspirations are.
Yeah, because I know that you left actually like full-time, a full-time career as I think a journalist and a
That's
writer
correct.
Because you wanted to focus on your art.
Yes.
Because you didn't have time for the rehearsals, you didn't
exactly.
have time for
so
all
I
of that, right?
You know, it's funny, my resume had me joining all these media companies for 1.5 years, 1 year, and then I would always resign, even though I enjoyed the job, because there was just no time to do rehearsals at night. And with the media, work is not always 9 to 5.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, so I decided to take the plunge and just do it full time.
Okay.
And it has been rewarding but also challenging. I mean, there's no denying the fact that it's some months you just wonder where your money is coming from,
How many people have that same problem, right? At least you're doing something that you...
That
gives you fulfillment, I guess, suppose.
It does, yes.
Yeah.
Frustrations and fulfillment.
Okay. So, just going back to what actually got you interested in musical theatre? Because I think that is your primary passion, if I'm right.
That's
correct.
I started listening to musical theatre when I was a kid, probably 10, 11.
Okay.
I remember when I was a teenager, there was this whole collection of magazines in the newsagents that came with a free CD. I mean, it was a package. It was called The Musicals Collection.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that.
It was ages ago.
It was probably early 90s to end of the 90s. And so they were it was like 2 ringgit, which was very expensive at the time because we had no money, right?
Yes.
So it's 2 ringgit for a CD with a magazine that talked about the behind the scenes, that explored each song in detail. Very well written. It's from the UK. And I started collecting those. And so just listening to it, going, oh, this is very interesting, I remember the first one was West Side Story. So to be introduced to West Side Story, and then followed by Phantom of the Opera, two different musicals.
Very different, yeah.
Very different, but so exciting.
Yeah.
It was really, that's what ignited the passion for me.
Okay.
And then I started getting involved in the drama society in my high school. And then I'd always done music like classically as a child. So started to explore looking at composing my own things, inspired by the musicals I listened to.
So mostly self-taught then?
Yes, wow. Actually, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And but did you go for like, you know, how all good Asian children went for piano classes?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I went for piano classes.
So you got that
when
kind
I was a kid, yeah. So I had
grounding.
The classical training,
okay.
The theory,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't actually study composing,
okay.
Even though that's my forte at the moment.
Oh, yeah. That you taught yourself how to do that.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
I'm speaking to Nick Chu. He is a composer, a musician and a playwright, and he is putting together a charity fundraiser concert for his brother, which is called Nick Chu and Friends in Concert, a fundraiser. We'll find out more after this quick break. You are listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Nick Chu. He is a composer, he's a musician, he's a playwright. He is putting together a fundraiser concert, Nick Chu and Friends in Concert, which is to raise some funds for his own brother. So we're going to find out a bit more about that. But before that, Nick, I just wanted to talk about how you got your start in the business of show business. Like, mm-hmm. What was your very first musical that you staged that, you know, you did mm-hmm. all the magic behind it?
Okay. Oh dear. Well, I think the first big skill. Okay, let's leave out high school. Okay,
okay
high
all right,
school
all
doesn't
right.
exist.
Okay. Something
the
bad
first
days.
Full scale show I got involved in was probably it was a musical called Richard III. Now that's obviously Shakespeare,
yeah.
And it was done in Perth when I was studying at Murdoch University doing my undergrad degree.
Okay,
and it was interesting because the director wanted Shakespeare. Richard III done as a Bollywood musical.
Okay.
And I just thought to myself, okay, I like, you know, as we've said, I've always been passionate about composing.
Mm-hmm.
I've never tried anything like that before.
Okay.
So I ended up composing something that sounded, sorry, like, sounded a bit more Middle Eastern than Bollywood. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry in retrospect. But, you know, it was funny. It was fun. It was very, you know, bling, a lot of lights and color.
Yeah.
And even though it was a university production, that was 2003,
mm-hmm.
that would be my first big scale, I guess, or medium scale show,
okay.
with a paid audience and everything,
yeah.
watching it. So that's where I started in terms of doing things more professionally.
Okay.
And then I graduated in 2006, I believe, with my undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't, with my master's. Goodness gracious.
Yes, it was your master's. Yeah,
yes, with my master's in 2006. And I came back and my first big show in KL wasn't so much a musical. It was a play with some music and songs. It was A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
At KL PAC in December 2008.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that opened a lot of doors for me as well.
Yeah.
And from there, it's just been, you know, mostly a positive uphill.
Yeah.
You know, not uphill, that's not the word. What am I looking for? It's been growing. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, it's been developing. Yeah.
And there was, I remember one that I managed to catch, which was The Edge.
The Edge, yes.
Which also dealt with mental
also
health
dealt
issues.
With mental health issues.
And everything.
That was, we workshopped that in 2008. That was 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Oh dear, time. And we did a fuller scale staging of that in 2013, which is 5 years ago.
Yes. And I remember
so,
we spoke to you then as well. Sabrina Hassan, I think.
I believe, yes,
directed.
It was Sabrina Hassan, that's correct, who directed the 2013 production.
Yeah.
So, yes, so that was probably the biggest show I've done in KL mm-hmm. in terms of critical reception,
okay.
Because we were nominated and we won some Beau Cameronian Arts Awards, I think, for best music, best script and lyrics. I think I won best musical director. I really should know all these
you
things,
think,
but I
don't.
I,
Nick?
it's the brain of an artist. It's not very present. No, I'm kidding. So we did get Bo Cameron and Arts Awards. Yeah.
And you've also been collaborating, I think, since way back in university, your university days, 2003, with Dr. Jenny DeRook. She's an associate professor, I think, of the Children's Theatre Program.
She's the associate professor of, I guess, the creative arts.
Okay.
That's the school.
Okay.
Yeah, but she runs the theater, the Children's Theatre mm-hmm. unit mm-hmm. at Murdoch University.
Mm-hmm.
She is retiring this year, so I have to use past tense, I guess. She ran the unit. But yeah, we have been collaborating with her since 2003.
Yeah.
The same year we did Richard III.
Yes.
Was when I worked with her on Zack Zebra's African Safari, mm-hmm. which we staged again in Perth in 2013 or 2014. I'm sorry, I don't have the dates precise in my head. But we also brought that to KL.
I remember that, yes.
And we brought that to KL in 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2015 at KL PAC.
Is that something that you enjoy doing, children's theatre as well?
I love it. It is so much fun. I like Jenny. I like Jenny's scripts because even though it's children's theatre, she doesn't talk down to kids. I think there's a lot of shows where, you know, people put on funny voices, "Hi, kids," and there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's fine as well. But Jenny's style of children's theatre is treating kids as, you know, you're equal in a way. So you talk to them as you would anyone
else. Yeah.
So a lot of the lines are very conversational. A lot of the lines are very, you know, so quite sophisticated, long sentences, but a lot of costumes, a lot of lighting, a lot of music. Those are important elements. Mm-hmm. And so what I like about Jenny's plays is that we call it children's theatre, but really it's family theatre because mm-hmm. there's a lot in there for grown-ups as well. Like when we did Zack Zebra in KL, I think the audience of grown-ups probably enjoyed it as much as the kids did.
Okay. Yeah,
probably even more because they understood more, possibly.
Yeah.
But this is the great thing about kids, about children. When they don't even follow exactly what's happening, you ask them, "Do you understand?" "Yes, I do." They know what's going on. Even though they might not get it word for word, they know this is the bad guy, that is the good guy. You know,
yeah, exactly.
We know who to cheer for.
Yeah.
A lot of them cheer for the bad guy.
Kids.
Yes.
They just have to be contrary.
Exactly. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love it.
And is that something that you're still going to, you think you might be pursuing in the future as well?
I definitely want to keep doing children's theatre.
Okay.
But I think at the moment, the PhD is still, you know, that's just the priority lah.
Okay.
And we'll see what happens beyond that.
But for your PhD, you are also like producing
I am also
as well,
producing
right?
shows, yes.
Okay. And this is, I guess, university-based.
Yes,
and
that's right. Well, no, actually, it's interesting that you asked that because what's happening in May this year mm-hmm. is that I'm actually staging The Edge in Perth.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wonderful.
So it's going to be like the Australian the Australian premiere, I guess.
Wow. Well,
that's going to happen at the Blue Room in Perth. In May this year. Now, technically, I'm not supposed to talk about it, but I figure that rule only applies to Perth because no one here is going to know, you know. So that's going to happen in May. And because that's happening while I'm doing my PhD, I've decided to make that my big project for the PhD.
Okay.
Because remember, we're talking about mental health.
Exactly.
We're talking about myself as an artist.
Yeah.
The Edge is about mental health. And also, you know, it saves me having to write something brand new for mm-hmm. the PhD. Mm-hmm. And also because I have the history of having staged The Edge in the past, I can then look at where I was as an artist 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and compare and contrast that with this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, doing The Edge in Perth is actually a great, tying it in with my PhD is the best thing to do.
That's wonderful.
And that's the plan. Yeah,
The plan. And I mean, it'll be interesting also to contrast the Malaysian reaction
Correct.
To it, the Australian reaction to
Correct.
It, and you know, that like you said,
you know,
time lapse.
Just by the nature of the delivery, the accents, the people who are producing it, who are performing it, everything is going to be so different.
Yeah.
Even though the music and the material is the same.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's going to be really exciting, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
happening end of May. Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, is this something that is funded by you or is this a state-funded thing?
The Edge, it is partially funded and sponsored by The Blue Room, which is a prominent venue in Perth, the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very well known among the indie art scene because they are very selective about what shows get to be performed there.
Okay.
And so to apply for it, we had to fill in this 20-page, application. You had to explain why it's relevant to today's society, why it's an important topic to talk about, how it's sustainable to the industry or how it contributes to the growth of the industry. So all these very interesting questions, challenging questions. And you really had to think like, oh my goodness, how do I answer these just to pitch a show to this venue?
Well, I mean, I suppose that goes back to your whole thing about not being self-indulgent. You know, this is the proof that this is not a self-indulgent piece of work.
And correct.
But are you a supporter then of subsidized arts? Do you think that is that can further enhance production?
I absolutely think so. I think more so in KL. I think right now there seems to be a shortage of original works, musicals especially, being staged simply for the reason that there's not enough money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I'm not a professional in terms of I'm not an expert in the whole money side of things.
Sure.
That's usually why I engage producers to do all the work.
Right.
But my understanding is that, number one, it's still tough economic times,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
It is, lah. And also, there's not enough corporate funding, and I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Just to try to put on a show, the hiring of a venue is in the thousands per day,
yeah.
You know, and it's hard to raise that kind of money on your own without a group or a company helping you out.
Yeah.
And I think based on what the conversations I've had with my colleagues in the industry, that's one of the big things that's, mm-hmm. you know, a main
yeah.
hindrance, like why
yeah.
we can't seem to be staging original works. And so I would say, yeah, I'm definitely in support of funding opportunities, of corporates lah, needing to, you know, just not needing, but, you know, just helping out. And I think it would be great if more corporates could see the importance of the arts as you know, growth for the industry, for the economy, number one, you know, and also just for personal and community growth and development.
Community growth,
yeah.
I strongly agree
yeah.
with that. Because I think I would imagine that, you know, when all those financial constraints are taken away from the equation, that, you know, you really can just focus on producing great work.
Exactly.
You know, because half of your job, I mean, I know you hire producers to it, but a lot of people, half of their work is actually getting the funding
getting the money,
and not really focusing on the work that they're trying to stage, right?
And then sometimes we stage something and it's, you can see the potential, but it's not quite there because we didn't have enough funds to get there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the challenge. So I would say definitely, you know, funding is an issue. Now, the other thing I wanted to say very quickly is that one thing I've observed about Perth is that they do seem to have a very collaborative, attitude. There's a lot of amateur, by amateur I mean non-paid, non-professional theatre companies where people volunteer to do things. And I think, you know, I mean, as much as we want money, I think sometimes the arts also needs that. So I know, I hope I don't sound like I'm contradicting myself, but community theatre is also something that's very important, I think. It can nurture the ties between the people involved. And, you know, like even musicians in Perth, they would play for a show, 20 performances, and not get paid.
Wow.
Even though, you know, here in Malaysia, it's harder to find musicians especially. Sorry, I'm not picking on musicians. I'm a musician myself. But, you know, a lot of the time, musicians would want to get paid. And I understand that maybe because here, a lot of musicians do it as a full-time thing. So they need to pay the bills.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe in Perth, possibly, a lot of them do it as a part-time thing or they've got full-time teaching or something. So they're able to contribute, to volunteer and to do things for free. But that spirit of, you know, profit share, the spirit of box office ticket sales, we will just split among ourselves, seems to be more popular in Perth, from my observation, than in Malaysia. In Malaysia now, you know, we always have to be a bit, I feel like we are always a bit wary. Sorry, we have to do profit share. Sorry, yeah. It's almost like it's such a bad thing that we have to share the sales. And I guess it's because we all want a fixed lump sum. If I do this show, I hope to get this much minimum guaranteed. In Australia, in Perth especially, it doesn't feel, from my observation, that that's the case. A lot of people go, no, we want to do this because it's the arts.
Okay.
You know, we know there's no money in it.
Okay.
And we'll volunteer our time. So it's an interesting observation.
And I guess if you go in with your eyes wide open, knowing that this is, you know, something that I'm not going to get maybe as much as I would like, then that's something that you do.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. So a lot of us, like in Malaysia, we just tell people up front, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to anyway.
Tell people
up front. It's
right
a profit share, you know.
The
other thing that the trend seems to be shifting towards doing much smaller shows. I might be doing a show later this year. End of the year.
Oh, nice.
Which I can't really talk about yet.
But you tease.
I tease. But it will be at a venue that's a 40-seater, you know, and that's fine because you know, I think it's much better to have a small space that you pack up with people than to have a huge space with just a few people in the audience. You know, the energy from a larger audience will definitely encourage you. And also, psychologically, you know, for the performers, it's like, oh, we've got a full house.
Yes,
as opposed to a half empty, you know.
Because that can be quite demoralizing.
Demoralizing, yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I think the trend seems to be, for Malaysia at least, for KL, seems to be shifting towards smaller scale shows.
Because I think also a lot more venues are opening up as well.
Yes.
I think that used to be a big issue, you know, not having the right kind of space, not having... And I think smaller places are opening up. Cool. And I mean, one of your current projects that we're talking about actually is the fundraising concert. So tell me about that. You know, I mean, I'm sorry to hear that your brother's not well, but yeah, what's happening?
Basically, my brother has had diabetes for type 1 diabetes for many years since he was, I think, more than 10 years, definitely.
Right.
He's 42 this year. And just recently, maybe last year, they discovered his vision started going.
Right.
And it was discovered that he had cataracts in both eyes.
Okay.
And for his age, to have cataracts, the most likely cause would be the diabetes complications.
Yeah.
And so he needs to go for eye surgery to get rid of the cataracts. And so while I was back in KL, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to try to see if I can raise some funds. You know, it's a... So I managed to get Harmony Hall in PJ as a venue provider. Cheryl Tay is the chairperson of the Selangor Phil.
Yeah.
And they do their rehearsals at Harmony Hall. It's their space.
Right.
So when Cheryl found out about this, she said, you know what, just use the hall.
Okay.
You know, so it's very, very,
very
kind, very
her.
Sweet and very generous of her. So that's happening, this coming week. But also, on top of the cataract surgery, my brother's kidneys have been having issues as well.
Right.
Again, related to diabetes. More so related to the medications that he's been taking for diabetes. So imagine you're trying to manage one condition and it affects something else.
The side effects.
And the last I heard, there was damage up to 70%.
Oh, no.
You know, and then so now we're thinking, oh, he's only 40-something. What, you know, we have to start looking at the possibility of dialysis in the future.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I say all this knowing full well there are people who have a lot more, you know, complicated problems.
Sure,
so, you know, I'm very aware of that. But, you know, it's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, of course.
So, at the same time, we're all taking it in stride and we're just managing it. You know, it's not like every day we are all at home crying.
No, I know. I mean,
we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, and it is a disease that can be managed.
It can be managed, yes. And so that's what we're doing. But I just thought, while I'm back, I've got fans, I've got my music. Why not try to put on a show, invite some people, you know, try to get some contributions in and just see how things go from there.
Okay. And so speaking of those friends, who are the people performing?
Well, we've got Peter Ong and Tria Aziz. They are both very well known in the musical theatre scene here. And Peter does quite a bit of opera as well, which is fantastic. We have Cheryl Tan. Cheryl is a wonderful musical theatre performer who does a lot of work in Singapore. She's very in demand. She's been on TV in Singapore. It's wonderful. We have Dominic Lok and Benjamin Lin. They run a performing arts school in Subang called Monday Show Entertainment. We also have Alia Kearney, Michelle Tan, Yi Xiao Chi, Henry Tu, and I have a special guest musician because I'm playing the piano, and I have a guest musician who is my cousin, actually. So it's a semi-family affair.
Yeah.
Andrew Filmer. He is a viola player. He's a violist.
I think he's been on the show before.
Yes, he has. He's Dr. Andrew Filmer.
Yes.
He's got a PhD in viola, which is very cool. So he's on board as well. And so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 friends plus myself.
Okay.
11 of us will be taking to the stage.
So wonderful that you're all coming together and doing this, you know,
you.
just to help you. I mean, to help your brother.
You.
I'm sure
That's
he's
right.
very appreciative of this. And I'm guessing the performances are music that
That's right.
Your original compositions?
That's correct.
Yeah, so
all of them would be my original works from various musicals.
Okay.
And it's a very, I hope it's going to be a very casual, very fun evening, you know. It's not something that we want to all stress about, you know.
Right.
So it's going to be a fun evening, I think. It's a very laid back, very conversational. I'll be at the piano talking to the audience, introducing its song and the singers, telling some short little stories.
Nice.
You know, and it'll just be a good time, you know, on top of helping my family out.
Okay, know. Okay. Yeah. All right. And that's happening this Thursday and Friday.
Thursday and Friday.
How do we get tickets? I mean, what is there, like a minimum donation?
Yes, there is a minimum donation of 30 ringgit per person, which is, you know, I think it's pretty affordable for a good night out.
And, you know, so many professional singers there.
Exactly.
And, you know,
so 30 ringgit.
It's a steal, really.
It's at Harmony Hall in PJ. Now, that's in Section 19.
Yeah.
And I believe if you Google it, you can just easily find the address.
Sure.
And so walk-ins, we are more than happy to have walk-ins. But if you'd like to book your seats to guarantee that you get a seat, the best way would be to email me.
Mm-hmm.
My email address is Nick, N-I-C-K, at nickchumusic.com.
Okay.
And Nick Chu is C-H-O-O.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Nick. And, wish you
Julia.
All the best. And I'm
Thank
sure
you.
This will be a success like all the other things that you've got planned up.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Julia.
You're most welcome. So as Nick mentioned, you can catch Nick Chu and friends in concert both tomorrow and Friday night at 8 p.m. at Harmony Hall PJ, which is located in Jalan 19/1, Section 19, Petaling Jaya. Seats, as Nick mentioned, also are available for a minimum donation of 30 ringgit per person. And for more information, do visit the Facebook event page, or you can email Nick again at nick@nickchumusic.com. So we're going to lead out with a song from Alice's Wonderland. So this was from which musical?
The musical. All right,
okay,
so
yeah.
Very quickly. Alice's Wonderland was produced by Chempaka Schools in 2017.
Okay.
It's their first original full-scale musical.
Uh-huh.
And we staged that in May. And, you know, I think I'm allowed to say this publicly. It's gotten into the Malaysian Book of Records.
Oh, wow.
For being the first professional-level original musical produced by a school in Malaysia.
Well done.
Yeah, so that's really something exciting.
Okay.
So this song is performed by my friend Michelle Tan, who's also going to be performing at the concert. And this song is called Nonsense Makes Sense to Me.
And here it is, Nonsense Makes Sense to Me. And you've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
No nonsense. What's so bad about nonsense? In my world, nothing would be what it is, for it would be what it isn't. In my world, I would drink tea, and folks like Mrs. Hart would be more pleasant. No more school and no more teachers to scold me for my nonsensity. Hey, it all makes sense to me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.